Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben. Do a lot of different things here at How Stuff Works, and one of those things is introducing my partner in crime here, in podcast crime, Scott, our auto editor. What's going on, Scott?
Oh, nothing new, Ben. Just excited about today's topic.
You know, I am too, but we're excited for different reasons. I'm excited because I don't really know anything about it. But let's go with a little bit of segue, you know, let's take a hypothetical listener there. Let's say he or she buys a car, and they buy a brand new car. Maybe it's never been on the market before, something 2009, 2010 model, and they seem pretty certain that it's not going to wreck or explode when you hit the brakes or anything, right?
You can be pretty sure of that. Yeah, I mean, the wreck part, I think that's pretty much up to the driver.
Okay, but, fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, they're pretty confident that that car is not going to break immediately once they get in the driver's seat.
How do they know?
That's because the manufacturer has tested the car over and over and over again at a place that we're going to talk about today called Proving Grounds.
Automotive Proving Grounds.
Automotive Proving Grounds, that's right.
And so what exactly are these, and how are they? Are they the same thing as, you know, you'll see a safety rating company like J.D. Power and Associates?
Well, they probably house something, you know, a facility that will do that. Mm-hmm. We'll get into all this, but automotive proving grounds are these enormous facilities that have outside and inside testing. They have labs as well. So the crash testing that you're talking about. May be conducted there, may be conducted somewhere else. It depends on, you know, just the way they have it set up.
Oh, okay.
But the crash testing is done indoors. Of course, you know, it's filmed and photographed over and over again, you know, high-speed slow-motion cameras. Uh-huh. We've talked about that before. I love that stuff.
But, yeah.
Automotive proving grounds, they do a lot of things there. But one of the biggest things they do is they have these great big, I mean, and when I'm talking big, I mean miles long tracks outside that are, you know, akin to big racetracks, you know, high speed ovals and road courses, things like that.
But so, miles long.
Miles long, yeah. I've got a couple of examples here of mile distances that these tracks cover. And, you know, I'll actually tell you one just so that you get an idea of the size of these things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You've probably seen the Daytona Speedway or the Indianapolis 500 Speedway.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
those are 2.5 miles long.
Okay.
At least Indianapolis is. Oh, boy, I'm second-guessing myself on Daytona. But
well, we know for sure Indianapolis.
I'll say Indianapolis. 2.5 miles long. That's an enormous track. There's a golf course in the middle, a museum. There's all kinds of parking, grandstands. It's huge. If you've ever been there, just to walk across the infield is a, you know, a good distance. The Chrysler Proving Grounds in Chelsea, Michigan, they have a high-speed oval that's 4.71 miles in length. So it's enormous.
Wow.
It's really big.
Why is it so much larger?
Well, it's just because that's what they wanted. They wanted one with a long, long straightaway. They wanted a high-speed oval that it has. Now, this is something interesting, too. It's got a banking to it, I should say, that allows a driver to travel at speeds up to, I think it's 140 miles per hour with no steering input. They can go around that in complete oval. Just keep the steering wheel straight.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. So that's
severe,
part of the reason.
Severe banking.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, so they can just head straight into the turn.
Uh-huh.
The vehicle just follows the line of the turn right through and safely takes them out on the other side.
So these things are, these proving grounds are enormous, perhaps little-known facilities where car companies put their products through their paces.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just high-speed ovals. It's also, you know, wet pavement and dry pavement and gravel and hills and potholes, intentional potholes.
Oh, wow.
They go through, you know, you've probably seen the tracks where, you know, they have the car headed straight and they have to go through a quick slalom course, and then they do it once in the dry pavement, and then they spray water on it. You know, it's kind of like a,
oh, yeah,
it's like sprinklers.
That. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what you find at a proving grounds. You'd find stuff like that, you know, where they can test all these different variety of surfaces and conditions all in one facility. And, you know, maybe they use the hill area, the steep terrain with different grades. You know, they've got 5% grades, 10% grades. I think they go all the way up to 30% grades, which are really steep.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They can test a truck for towing capability there. Or they can test a, you know, like a system maybe that allows you to lift your foot off the gas pedal so that it doesn't roll backwards, you know, when you're accelerating up a hill if you have a manual transmission.
Okay. Okay, then. Why do they do this?
Well, the reason is it's pretty simple, really, when you think about what their goal is with testing, is that they don't want it to get into the hands of the consumer where, you know, they may subject it to something that, you know, they haven't subjected it to in testing and have it break on the consumer. It's far better for the car company to have something break during testing and try to figure out why it broke, how to fix it, and then perfect it, test it again, and then give it to the customer.
Oh, that makes sense, because no company wants to issue those recalls.
Oh, right? No, those are extremely expensive for car companies. So anytime you hear about a recall, you know it's literally millions of dollars. It doesn't matter how small that recall is, it costs them a lot of money. Because, you know, there's not only is there are parts involved,
right?
There's also cost associated with just notifying the owners of the vehicles. Another cost associated with the labor to make the change, whatever that would be. And then, of course, you know, if there's the unfortunate situation where, you know, there's a lawsuit attached to that as well.
You know, I'm not going to name the car, but when I was growing up, my parents actually received a recall notice. And it may not have been even specifically for their model. It was just a notice that said anyone who bought this certain line of car between this year and this year, there may be a specific, and it sounded like relatively minor problem, with the middle seat restraint in the back. And it occurred to me, you know, I was very excited at first because I had just seen something on television about class action lawsuits. And I, in my childish mind, thought we could really make the next few years off of this. It turns out it was the wrong specific type of car.
Yeah.
And that I didn't know what I was talking about, which happens a lot. You know?
Yeah. Not as often as you think, probably. It's the recall, the kind of recall that you're talking about is something that they recommend you come in and have it repaired because, you know, there may be a problem with it. It's not a forced recall, I don't think. It doesn't sound like what you're talking about.
No, I think it was a recommendation.
It's not like a faulty wiring harness is going to cause a fire or something that's going to prevent your airbag from deploying. Mm-hmm. Those are a lot more serious and, you know, safety issues, of course. They strongly suggest you get your vehicle in, or they actually contact you and say, we're coming to get the car to fix it because we're not going to, you know, have to take care of this on the back end when something bad happens.
And those are relatively rare, aren't they?
Those are pretty rare, yeah. I mean, most recalls are, you know, here's a notice that, you know, you might want to come in and have this taken care of because there's a better, newer version of it that, you know, will keep you safer in some way or won't rattle or won't break in, you know, 2 months or whatever we found it
work. Oh, I see.
This testing that we'll get back to the testing is that they have just all kinds of different surfaces, all kinds of different environments. They test in different, they even have facilities in different environments so that they can test cold weather. We've talked in the past about, just off air, we've talked about field testing. And this is a little different. This isn't out in the real world. This is still, you know, locked gate type stuff. They're behind, not really behind closed doors, but, you know, they're in a private test facility that's owned by the manufacturer. So relatively safe from prying eyes, but a lot of times you'll get photographers that camp out and try to get spy photos of vehicles on test tracks, things like that.
Oh, I'm sure people want to sneak out and get the leak of those photographs.
Well, sure, because you're talking, you know, this is their own in-house test facility, so they're going to take a vehicle out to their own test facility, you know, somewhere secure, and they're going to, from the very beginning. So you may have this may be a, you know, great opportunity for you to see the very first, you know, the very first shot of this vehicle. You may be able to photograph that for the first time. So, you know, from the beginning to the very end, and even after they've delivered it, I believe they still continue to run tests there.
Well, let me ask you this then. And this is exactly what I was thinking about here. am I correct in assuming that as soon as they get a prototype level of a vehicle, this testing begins?
That's correct. Yeah. In fact, they may even not have a complete prototype. They may bring a they're trying to test an engine. They put it in a different vehicle. That's probably a bad example. But
right. But I've heard of that.
Yeah. They take whatever they can out there. They try to test as early and as often as possible. And if it's not lab testing, it's testing out in the open on these tracks for whatever it happens to be. If they've got a new axle they want to try out, they may put it on an older truck. They'll put a 2010 or 11 or 12 at this point. They may put an axle from 4 years out on an older model truck that it just happens to fit on, just to test it out and see how that axle behaves.
4 years out?
Yeah, or more. Really?
Wow.
Really. It's not all that uncommon to have them working on vehicles that are 4 or 5 years in advance. So
it sounds like each vehicle in part is in a way getting a degree. It's going
to
car college.
It takes quite a time. I know that development time has been sped up quite a bit, and a lot of that's has to do with, computer aided graphics and the simulated crash testing versus real testing. And there's a lot of ways to speed things up, these automated durability roads that they have.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ways to speed testing, and they really do try to get the lead time, I guess, from when design the vehicle is just a design on paper all the way through a real product.
So where are these places? You mentioned one in Chelsea.
Yeah, there's one in Chelsea. That's Chrysler's proving ground. That's pretty close to its headquarters there in Auburn Hills, Michigan. But they're really scattered all over the world. Ford, I've got Ford example here. Ford. Now remember, this is just Ford only.
Okay.
Ford. Okay, they're at least up until recently they were partial owners of Mazda.
Uh-huh.
I think I just read recently they sold a lot of their stock in Mazda, but we won't get into that whole thing. But they have proving grounds in Japan for the Ford-Mazda combination vehicles. Now, just Ford only, they've got Michigan proving grounds in Romeo, Dearborn. They have extreme cold weather test facilities in Manitoba, Canada. They have Mexico proving grounds, which, of course, in Mexico, a town I can't pronounce. I won't even try. They have proving grounds in Brazil, England, Belgium, Australia. They had proving grounds in Florida and Arizona, and they had another one in Michigan that also shut down they had to get rid of for, they needed money or just didn't realize that it was redundant with another facility.
With the other place.
Now, Chrysler, GM, Toyota, Nissan, Volkswagen, all of them have proving grounds that are located in Arizona. So you got all these competing manufacturers. They're really kind of clustered together, and they're all right around the Phoenix area, which is kind of unique as well. But there's so much territory, so much space that they're able to spread out enough that they can have all these different competing manufacturers in the same area, even though these are enormous facilities. I mean, you can see them from satellite photos, and they're really impressive.
Oh, yeah, you were telling me about
that. Yeah, the satellite photos of these places are really cool if you ever get a chance to look them up. A lot of them, you'll see a satellite photo, but you'll see the twisted tracks. You'll see the huge oval facilities that they are, oval high-speed tracks that they have.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, a lot of road courses. You can't tell any of the terrain, the height terrain, like the hills.
The topology.
Right? Yeah, you can't
topography.
Yeah, that's right. You can't determine topography of the area, but you can see a lot of giant buildings that are indoor test labs as well. Interesting places. They're really cool. So I've also heard that, some of the urban sprawl in the Phoenix area is causing some of these guys to say, well, maybe we don't need this one anymore, and we're going to find somewhere new.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because you don't want houses backed right up to it because, some of your privacy goes away.
Right.
So
And who knows what could happen. If the neighborhood next door figures out that there's a testing ground for cars of the future,
they would know well ahead of time because these are big enough that you know what's going on there. When
really,
it's like having a race course next to you. I mean,
you'd hear it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and there's guardrails, and I mean, it's not very stealth.
Well, it makes sense to me though that a Japanese or European car company would come to the States, especially to the more arid parts of the States, to build a track. But it's difficult to think of the reasons why, a company like Ford would be building a track in a place where real estate is at a premium, like Belgium, you know?
Well, they probably have, I'm guessing, but they must have manufacturing facilities nearby.
And to test
that particular vehicle, this is just off the top of my head. I just don't know.
I won't quote you.
That's okay. I'm sure. Yeah. No one will. I'm sure. No one will find fault with that. But, they have the proving grounds near where the facility that they're building that vehicle is. Let's say they want to test their trucks. They'll buy a large piece of property in an area near a truck plant so that, you know, it's relatively simple for them to get the product over there to test it. That's not always the case, but, you know, that's kind of best guess.
I guess that does make sense. Mm-hmm. I didn't think – all I could think of was how crazy it would be to have to buy square miles in Japan or somewhere in Europe. You know?
I'm sure that would be a lot more difficult than buying some property in Arizona because there's, you know, just that much more open land.
I got a letter in the mail earlier. This guy wants to sell me a beachfront condo. No, I'm kidding.
From Arizona? Nice.
Yeah.
Real nice. Yeah. Great.
I know. Look, not every joke's going to work, Scott. I apologize.
Yeah, it just didn't really fly, but...
No.
You're pretty good sometimes.
Well, thanks, man. Okay, well, back to testing.
You're a funny guy.
You're a funny guy.
I know.
Do you think that with the current situation that a lot of automotive companies are going through, do you think that these testing grounds are going to stick around?
Well, that's also kind of up to debate right now as to whether they're going to hang on to as many facilities as they have. I mean, I just read you Ford, what they have. Now, imagine every manufacturer has similar facilities, you know, around the world.
Okay.
Not exactly that many, or maybe not as diverse. But a lot of them, sure, you know, why wouldn't you look at, you know, selling a $500 million piece of property when you need cash right now?
Yeah.
The problem is, who's going to buy it? You know, who's going to pick that up? Is it another manufacturer because they're in the same condition? And really, it's well set up for exactly what it's built. You know, it's built for testing automobiles. It's not really, you know, maybe a golf course or something come in and just demolish it. But again, you know, you're looking for someone to buy square miles of property. That's pretty rough right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't think we could get it. Even if we pulled our resources and asked Jerry very nicely,
to go in with us. I'm pretty sure I don't have $500 million or whatever it would cost, but I don't have it.
I've got one last question before we wrap this up. Mm-hmm. Can people visit these?
You know what? Oddly enough, you can, but you have to be invited. It's not something, and they don't want you hanging out around the fence, you know, because that's where the spy photography thing comes in.
Okay.
They don't like that. I think they have patrols that go around the edges of these things and check for that occasionally, if not cameras to monitor that type of thing.
Well, it's like the Area 51,
of cars. Well, they're pretty secure. But I've been to some for ride and drive events. That's how I get there, or have been there, where they have the media come in to drive. You know, the 2009 lineup of cars that they offer, you know, either it's trucks or cars or sports cars or whatever it is. Mm. But these are perfect places for that because it's a, you know, closed track facility. They know exactly who's on the track at what time and, you know, they can monitor all that. But there's also room for, you know, tents to be set up and, you know, all the hospitality stuff that goes along with it. So if you're invited, if you're a member of the media that, you know, they want you to come out and test drive, or they want you to review a vehicle early, they may have you just drive it on their own proving grounds. They may not have you take it out onto the city streets.
And you've been to a place like this?
Yeah, a few of them. I've been to General Motors, the Milford Proving Grounds. I've also been to the Chelsea Proving Grounds. I actually went to the Bosch Proving Grounds, which is Bosch. Does they were working on traction control systems in Flat Rock, Michigan, and they happened to be right behind one of my favorite small little racetracks that I used to go to on the weekend too, and they were testing a traction control system, and they were showing us how, you know, a vehicle on dry pavement skids, you know, at 80 miles an hour, and they make a quick move to the left, quick move to the right, what happens with it on, what happens with it off. And it was pretty impressive. It's not a huge, you know, that one's a little bit smaller than, you know, like, let's say, a Chrysler facility or a Ford facility. But still impressive. It's really big. And they have a lot of pavement, I'll tell you that.
I imagine so.
It's fun. They're fun to go to, and they're fun to drive on because, you know, it's just like being on a race course.
That's I don't know if that's entirely accurate. I don't know if it's just like being on a race course.
Similar.
Similar. Yeah, agreed.
Okay, good.
I can't really disagree with the expert.
So no, they're fun, though. And one other thing is that if you get a chance, check them out online to look at the satellite photos of these places, and you'll get an idea of the size and just how, just how cool the track setup is, because they've got so many different types of things happening at these places. It's worth looking at.
We don't even know. I love the secrecy there, you know? Although I have to say, now I'm looking at you askance now that I know you've been there.
Oh, well, it's not. I don't think it's that impressive, but it's it was fun. I definitely remember it.
Yeah, would you recommend it for people if the opportunity came up?
If the opportunity came up, of course. Anytime you get a chance to do something like that that's normally, you know, reserved or left, you know, to an exclusive group or something like that. If you ever happen upon that chance, do it.
Well, our listeners, you guys heard it here first. It is worth your time. Scott, do you have anything else for us on this one?
I'm out.
And I guess that means we're both out of here, because, you know, I don't have too much to add. So to our listeners, thanks again for tuning in. If you have any suggestions or an idea for a future topic, please do send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.